Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Charge that really will resonate with the people of Illinois. Tell us now.
Whether you want to talk about illegal hiring and falsification of hiring documents.
What is the charge that you're impeaching this man for?
That we laid out a 13-count article of impeachment, ranging on articles of illegal hiring.
Bringing flu vaccine?
Spending millions of dollars on flu vaccines, which the FDA told him he would not be allowed to bring in.
Does his corrupt dealings on that Senate seat have anything to do with the fact that you are stripping him of his office in this kangaroo court?
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time.
It is the Savage Nation, and it is Blue Monday in the Savage Nation. We open with Jerry Rivers from Fix News Network hitting a new low today when Jerry Rivers on the Fix News Network went on a tirade defending the disgraced Governor Blagojevich. I've never seen anything like this. Now, I can ask certain questions about Geraldo Rivera or Jerry Rivers, but they're not worth asking. We know who he is. We know he is about as sleazy as they come in the media. We know that he used to be on CNN. We know that he gave away troop positions during the war in Iraq. We know that Murdoch hired him in order to capitulate to the left several years ago and to triangulate the left with Fix News Network. And that's all well and good. It's his business. He can run it any way he wants. But when we see Jerry Rivers going berserk on the air today, it leads me to ask a bigger question. And that bigger question is about the media in general. We saw, for example, that the so-called conservative Billy Crystal, the call boy from the Meekly Standard, actually praised Obama after the dinner with Obama, proving that you can buy certain people for as cheap as a meal. And I will tell you, I'm watching the meltdown of formerly so-called conservative outlets such as Fix News Network, which is occurring on a daily basis. And I'm asking you, who was the biggest fake conservative in the government media complex? Have you stopped watching false conservative outlets like the Fix News Network? Who or what was the last straw for you with regard to Fix News Network? We know that MSLGBT, Microsoft Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transsexuals, with that character at night who allegedly urinates on himself and needs to wear male diapers, we understand that they're a disgrace. We understand that they represent a very minuscule segment of the American population, notably those people found in Austin, Texas, West Hollywood, and Castro Street. But when it comes to the Fix News Network, wouldn't you expect them to rein in Jerry Rivers? Do you think this is appropriate for a commentator, a pundit, to attack a state senator with accusations like it's a kangaroo court, and he asks the man a question doesn't let him answer? And I found it a shocking thing to watch. Neil Cavuto has long been an embarrassment. I mean, I said this to you months ago after he had an interview with his boss, that he's nothing but a sock puppet for Murdoch. And that's okay. He needs to keep his job. You know, he's an innocent enough guy. I don't think he really knows what's going on. But to see a guy like Jerry Rivers get up there today and attack a state legislator in Illinois without letting him finish a statement, I thought was a new low. But that's not the biggest issue. I mean, there are bigger issues out there. I just thought I'd note it. That's all. Play Blue Monday again. Let's start all over again on the Saturday.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, like
all right. right, so I'm off the Solanaceae. I'm off the tomato. I'm off the potato. I'm off the eggplant. I'm off all of the Solanaceae. I mean, I wrote about it 30 years ago, but I never needed to worry about it because I never had pains in my joints. But today, I ran into, you won't believe this. You know, I meet people from here and there. I was walking around a mall that I go to by bicycle on a daily basis. And a man came up to me holding his daughter's hand, and he said that he's a, I don't know how to put it, he said he's a massage therapist. And as we got to talk, I noticed he was from Eastern Europe originally. And we talked about the coming Soviet-style America and how fast we're moving in that direction and how he sees it. But then he told me he is a healer. And, of course, those of you who don't understand any of this will immediately laugh at it and, you know, shake it off because you live on prescription drugs anyway. So that's all you know. You don't know much about natural healing. And I told him I have a little pain here and there I never had before. He said, well, go. I heard about the Solanaceae years ago. But the more I looked into the Solanaceae, the tomatoes, the potatoes, the eggplant, the red pepper, which I love, all of them, I realized that he may be right. Because these, you don't know this, but the foods in the Solanaceae contain solanine, which is a chemical that you find in Solanaceae, a plant family. Solanine is a chemical that is an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. And that's a chemical that inhibits the cholinesterase enzyme from breaking down acetylcholine. And so that increases the level and duration of action of the neurotransmitter acetylcholine. In the short and long of it, it prolongs muscle contraction in some cases. So therefore, for those of you who have heard, oh, well, if I have slight arthritis or this and that, I should give up tomatoes and potatoes and the nightshades, the Solanaceae, you may not know why. This explains the why. And it's a very interesting concept. And, of course, you could dismiss it if you're a fool who works in the American media, whose bills are paid for by the pharmaceutical industry. But if you have a little bit of a thoughtful mind and you look into this, you understand that food is medicine and medicine is food. And as such, food is also a drug. And as such, food can act both as a medicine and as a poison. And in certain people, foods act as poisons and or medicines, depending upon who you are and what you are. Now, this would make great sense to most Americans who take vitamins and watch their diet. And it might even help the man on MSLGBT who urinates on himself under the desk. I was told from friends at the set at MSLGBT that they have to bring a sponge mop in after he leaves, yelling and screaming at real Americans. But perhaps if he controlled some of his cholinesterase inhibitors, he might be able to control his bladder. 1-800-449-8255, phone number michaelsavage.com. Numerous other stories on my website, michaelsavage.com. I think the biggest story is that Obama the pinhead, or Obama the egghead, or Obama the leftist lawyer, or Obama the fanatic, or Obama the socialist, is trying to crush the U.S. auto industry, which is already on its knees, with socialist regulation just when it is at its weakest point. It's an astonishing story. But this shows you what didactic liberalism can do. Today, the great Obama, Obama the Magnificent, announced he would allow more stringent emissions and fuel efficiency standards on cars. Now, I ask you, is this the right time to do that to the U.S. auto industry? Of course it's not the right time. But this is what happens when you elect a college professor to the presidency who is over his head, who is not truly thinking things through, but is simply acting on liberal protocols, saying we want less pollution, we want more efficient cars, therefore we will control the creation of cars, even if it cripples the industry, we don't care. That's the kind of thinking there is, which is no thinking. And it goes next to the next issue. We want gays in the military. We want open gay behavior in the military. We want don't ask, don't tell drop. We want do ask, do tell, my dear. What effects it will have? We don't care. Will it destroy group morale? We don't care. Will it make men not join the military who don't like being around gays in a shower? We don't care. Will it weaken the military? We don't care. All that matters is that we feel good doing it and that it satisfies one of our primary contributors, the homosexual mafia. I'll be right back.
The
There are 13 counts, 8 of which relate to the criminal counts against him.
Swear
five
to
of
God
which have nothing
that this
to do
has
with
something
that.
To do with the public corruption case that's pending in the U.S. Attorney's office. As you sit there, hold up your right hand. Swear to God, does this or does this not have something to do with that public
All right,
corruption
turn it
case?
On. This is Jerry Rivers losing it on Fox News Network, bringing Fox News to the lowest level I've ever seen it. This is not tabloid TV. This is not even the wrestling match. This is below. I don't know how they're going to maintain any integrity with a man like him so out of control. I don't know. I mean, Cavuto should have known better than to let the disgraced Jerry Rivers on his show and go on like this. On MichaelSavage.com, reading from the bottom up, I don't know if any of you are fight fans. I am. Sugar Shane Mosley, 37 years old, beat one of the toughest Mexican fighters I've ever seen in my life. I thought Mosley would lose because I watched Antonio Margarito in a previous fight. I never saw a Mexican guy as tough as this in my life. Never. You know, you got to watch fights to understand how tough the human body can really be. But I could not believe it. I thought that the 37-year-old Mosley was going to get a beating from the hard-punching Mexican who had dethroned previously unbeaten Miguel Cotto last July. But if you had watched this fight, I mean, you can't believe the kind of punishment the human body can take. Well, if they're as conditioned as this, certainly the average man would die from a single punch from a professional fighter. My father taught me that when I was very young. I found that to be astonishing because I used to watch fights and say, how can they take it? And my father explained to me that one punch from a professional fighter would kill the average man if the punch hit him in the right part of the body, in either the head or in the chest. It's certainly true. And you have to marvel at the strength of a professional fighter, whether it be a boxer, or in the next case that I'm going to discuss, which is the next story that we put up, of a fight that occurred down in Anaheim over the weekend. It's the picture is of a new Russian champion. You can't believe this guy. This guy, as described, as the face of an assassin. I've never met him personally, but he was fighting, I believe, another Russian man, and this guy knocked him out in the first round. And they say that the Russian mixed martial arts star brings Mike Tyson's killer to the ring. Many have said that the cold-blooded Tyson we knew in his days of real damage had nothing on today's mixed martial arts dynamo, Fedor Emelianenko. And you have to see these guys in the ring to understand what I'm talking about. What's intriguing to me about this new breed of Ukrainian fighter that's appearing mainly, well, in the mixed martial arts ring and in the boxing ring, what's amazing to me is that they're not as conditioned, they're not as visually conditioned as the American fighters. In other words, the Russians, who are as strong as an oak tree, will occasionally have a waist that's rather big. It's not lean. There are no abs. They don't show their abs, in other words. Rarely do you see the abs on these big Russian fighters, and I find it amazing. Because this whole concept of your body having to be stripped down to almost a 2, 3, 4, 5% body fat level is absurd for a fighter. And if you look at, you know, I can go on and on here, but if you look at, let's look at figures together mentally of warriors from the past, from the Middle Ages, for example, or going back further. You know that famous image of a Chinese martial artist with the large sword in his hand? They're portly. They were always very portly. The Japanese figures of samurais were always of portly men. They were never thin and lean, never. And, of course, there was a reason for that. And we have developed the idea that in order to be a fighter, you have to be stripped lean, you know, abs and all of your muscles showing. Now, I'm not saying that they're weak, but it's intriguing to me that the Ukrainians are not built that way and they don't condition themselves that way, and yet they can take more punishment. And it seems to me they can level out more, but they can dish out more punishment. Just an interesting observation about body type, and I think we're obsessed far too much with this idea of no body fat, 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 fat. It's absurd. It is absurd to try to attain the look of a post-op transvestite, particularly for males in the modern American society, but that seems to be the norm, is that both men and women today want to look like post-op transvestites who are on a starvation diet. Did anybody see those fights? Sugar Shane Mosley beating the Mexican fighter? What a fight that was. Or I missed the one down in Anaheim with Fedor Emelianenko. Frankly, I should have gone. I was invited. I didn't know the fight was on. A family member went who sponsored one of the fighters. I should have been there. But I wasn't in Anaheim. I really missed that one. But what a fight. I saw the replay of that one. Wow. My God. I know it's not a big thing, what, 0.1% of the American people watch fights at all. But to me, it's interesting. It encourages me. You know what it is when I watch a fight, when I get stronger? It's like when I watch MSLGBT, I get weaker. When I listen to Robert Reich talking to Andrea Mitchell, I get nauseous. I think both of them should be in orange jumpsuits for what they've done to the country. But when I see truly tough men going face-to-face with each other, you say to yourself, my God, look what they can take. Or when I was a kid, let me go back to when I was a kid. Everything kid. You know, you do develop certain attitudes towards life when you're young, don't you? That don't really change no matter how you think you've changed or developed. For example, I used to read the Daily News, the Daily Mirror, the New York Post, the Journal American. My father read the 4 or 5 papers that were around in New York at the time. And there was always a picture on the front page of the Daily News and the Daily Mirror. It was always a graphic newspaper, so it was easy for children and liberals to read. And consequently, when I would see, they show a kid falls out of a 5th-story window with an arrow, dot, 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 and he hit an awning and bounced off and lived. I say, how does he live? How does a kid fall out of a 5th-story window, hit an awning, bounce off and live? It leads you to believe that every little ache and pain you have is nothing compared to what the human being can take. But we're living in a victim society. We're living in a victim society. Every ad, oh, I felt the pain, take a Tylenol. Oh, I got a bad headache, take a Tylenol. Oh, I think I'll play soccer, take a Tylenol Advance. Oh, I'm going to go out shopping, but my hand doesn't hurt, take a Tylenol. You wonder why you have kidney failure and liver failure? You idiots. You don't understand what these drugs are doing to your livers and kidneys, which I have to pay for? Why do you think there's an epidemic of kidney and liver failure in the United States of America today? Why do you think? Because you're living on pain pills, and the pain pills challenge the liver. Don't you understand that? But you wouldn't hear any of this on the television shows because they sponsor them. And that is why they hire people who urinate in their pants underneath the desks on MSLGBT. They hire them because they're fronts for the drug companies. Don't you understand that? And now let's tie it into here. Jerry Rivers going crazy defending Blago. He made it all about flu vaccine. In other words, Jerry Rivers, who works for Fox News Network, has many sponsors that are drug companies. Don't you understand that? I'm lucky. They don't sponsor my show, so I'm free to say what I want to say about them. The fact of the matter is, follow the money. Always follow the money. And then you will understand what is going on, which leads us right back to Obama. Follow the money. He is surrounded by Clintonistas. What does that tell you? Follow the money. It's always about money. Don't you understand that?
Savage.
All right, we're talking about this and that. It's a mixed bag on Monday. You know what I'm saying? It's a mixed number of things, from acetylcholine to martial arts to the man who allegedly urinates on himself on MSLGBT to Jerry Rivers making a fool of Fox News Network to whatever. Now we'll go down to the brass tacks level of the show. Home Depot, Caterpillar, Texas Instruments, and others are slashing jobs. Combined, 50,000 new jobs will be lost at big companies. That should make Obama very happy. After all, he's anti-corporation, isn't he? Aren't all the leftists against corporations? Don't they always say, hey, the American corporation has to go? Well, they should be real happy. The news corporations that they work for are downsizing, so I guess they'll be happy about sitting in cafes and plotting the revolution. From drugs to computer chips, top companies announced today that they're laying off nearly 50,000 employees as the reeling economy took a heavy toll on the already strained job market. This is amazing. Now, Caterpillar announced that its fourth quarter profit dropped 32%. Why? World economic slowdown, less need for equipment. The company is going to eliminate 20,000 jobs, about 18% of its workforce. Drug maker Pfizer announced it will acquire Wyeth for $68 billion, and now it will cut 8,000 jobs from its current workforce. Classic corporate stupidity. This is what broke some of the banks. This is what made the Bank of America go reeling by buying that stupid brokerage house. They should all go to jail, these corporate directors. They, again, don't think about the ramifications of what they do. They're using other people's money. So they buy a company, they fire 8,000 people, meaning you, and then they go on to their $50 million jet, and they're happy. and the company goes into deeper trouble. 19,000 jobs will be eliminated in the first year, said Pfizer spokesman in a telephone interview. Home Depot, the nation's largest home improvement retailer, announced will cut about 2% of its workforce, or 7,000 jobs. It will eliminate 4 dozen stores, including all of its specialty Expo Design Center stores, including 3 in L.A. County and 3 in Orange County. Unbelievable. I'll give you an example. I live in a variety of places in the Bay Area. One of the areas I live in is in Marin County. There was a Best Buy in Sausalito over by Marin City. Then there's a newer Best Buy that they opened up in San Rafael. Now, I know looking at it that there was no need to open up a second Best Buy within a few miles of the first one. But this is the kind of illogic that corporate directors are famous for. They don't think about the ramifications. They went to the banks 3-4 years ago, and they said, we want to open up. Oh, sure, here's like $200 million. Go open up another store. So the bankers don't care either. They know they're going to be long gone. They don't pay for it because it's not their money. So now you got two Best Buys. They're both going to be out of business because there's no customers for the electronics and whatever else they sell. Certainly not enough customers. Who pays for it? Certainly not you. Who pays for it? The stockholders pay for it. The people who work for the companies pay for it. But you don't pay for it. Or do you? Of course you do. You pay for it through bailouts. The government should not be bailing out these corporate morons. If they do these things, they should lose personal income. And General Motors now, they're losing 2,000 jobs. And so this is very, very bad news. But yet the market goes up. The stock market goes up. Sprint executive says labor reductions are always the most difficult, but many companies are finding it necessary in this environment. In other words, firing. That's at Sprint. The Kansas-based Sprint will include 850 positions expected to be eliminated under a voluntary separation plan started late last year. All double talk, separation plan. Firings. Separation plan. So that's what's going on. I say we are approximately 2 years away from the bottom of the control depression that we're in. I say we have not yet seen the bottom at all. There's no way that we're at the bottom. And Barack Obama certainly inherited the bust from George Bush and the Republican thieves. There's no question about it. No one's denying that. But they didn't act alone. Make no mistake about it. The Republicans didn't act alone. It was a hand-in-glove thing. Yeah, the Democrats made them give loans to unqualified minorities and illegal aliens, and they were happy to give them. So both parties are to blame. But the economy is contracting at an annual rate of 6%. Do you understand that in America? The economy is retracting or contracting at an annual rate of 6%. Which is like the mid-depression year of 1931, where it was contracting at 6.4%. You understand this? The dangers are coming because the collapse of global trade is choking off the mini-boom in U.S. exports, and it's going to set off another stage of the crisis. We're losing 500,000 jobs a month. 500,000 jobs a month. So it's like early 1931, according to some economists. But it's not yet like 1933. And that second leg of the Depression was the result of a Dickensian leadership blind to the dangers of debt deflation. And I'll pause right there because you got to look at the article on michaelsavage.com, which explains it in better detail. But make no mistake about it. China's economy, China's currency are the Achilles heel of the global boom, of the global economy. And the fact of the matter is that China is manipulating its currency to this day, and they may have caused our meltdown. That's both bad news and good news. The bad news is that we have a meltdown. The good news is that China is so deeply tied into the U.S. economy that they can't afford to bust us completely, or they'll have a revolution on their doorsteps. Because as you know, tens of millions of Chinese workers from the rural areas came into the big cities to the industrial centers. Now, as the industrialization is winding down in China because they can no longer produce the junk, they can no longer export the garbage they produce. There's just not enough people who need the junk. The people have gone back to their villages in China with no income. And rural unrest is growing in China. Okay, so they're in a real conundrum in China in that they have very few solutions to the problem. The factories have to remain at a low output because there's no market for the goods anymore. On the other hand, if they don't give these tens of millions of people something to do, they're liable to cause a revolution for the old guard that run China, you know. So I know what usually happens, and I can also predict what's coming here. I really don't want to bum you out, but I'll tell you right now that Obama is trying to morph FDR with a Works Projects Administration kind of job creation. But the problem is this administration is so clueless that they're not really going to create jobs as much as funnel the money into the hands of various contributors under the guise of a stimulus plan. It's not going to help the average man. It's going to go directly back into the government so that the people who contributed to the Obama machine will get the money back. Very few people actually get jobs. There's a big difference between what FDR did and what these clowns are trying to do. I have told you that my father lived through the Depression. He told me that if it was not for the WPA, the Works Progress Administration, where he as an unemployed young man was given a job as a chauffeur for a state assemblyman, he wouldn't have been able to basically make a living during the Depression. He was a young guy, no job. I don't even know to this day how he got it because he died so long ago. I'd like to ask him how he's able to get it. He didn't know anybody. But they gave him a job as a chauffeur for a state assemblyman in New York, and he told me I used to drive him up to the racetrack up there, and I don't know where, all of that. But he said, well, it was great for him because the WPA kept him going. And I know that. I mean, look around. I know that the tunnels were all, many of the tunnels in America that you drive through even to this day and you see beautiful white tile. That was a result of the government employing men, skilled artisans who could lay tile, to give them work. I'm not against that if that's what it takes to get people working. But I don't think Pelosi's going to put the money in the hands of the worker. I don't think so at all. I think the money's going to go straight into the kitty of the people in the government itself to a great extent. That's what bothers me. But going back here to what I was getting at in a bigger picture, FDR could not save America's economy merely through spending programs, merely through big government. It didn't work. It didn't work. It employed people. But it did not really restore the economy. I am sorry to tell you, and this is a hard thing for me to admit on the air, because it's very pessimistic, very gloomy, and very, very ominous, truthfully. The only way the U.S. was taken out of the Great Depression was through World War II. And I am telling you that as an amateur student of history, we are going to go to war in the next few years. Make no mistake about it, while Obama ran on a peace platform, he is going to turn out to be one of the biggest warmongers in history in order to save the U.S. economy. That's my prediction. Exactly where it will occur, how it will occur, I do not know. He certainly said that he wants to ramp up the number of people going into Afghanistan. I mean, so take your choice. Iraq was Bush's war, or what, Afghanistan will be the Democrats' war, and that'll be a good war to the people in the media? I mean, you'll see what's coming. Whatever he does, they'll say is great. You know, if it's a bullet with a D on it, it's a good bullet. If it was a bullet with an R in it, it was a bad bullet. So, you know, you take your choice here. But the fact of the matter is, I believe we're going to go to war, and it's not going to be a self-contained small war like Iraq, which is what it was. I have a terrible fear it's going to be a much bigger engagement in order to ramp up the auto industry, putting them on war production, making tanks, in order to ramp up the shipbuilding industry and to make ships. Trust me, that's what's going to save the economy, nothing else. And that really is worrisome. But if you study history, you'll find out that a government does what a government has to do to save a nation. And I do not believe that the Obama administration is any different than any other, okay? I know it's a little off the topic here. We started with job contractions and people losing and the twin blasts of fiscal and monetary stimuli that have done nothing. They've been massive. The Fed has slashed interest rates to zero. If those of you who have any money know this, whether you have your money in banks or in T-bills, you're earning zero. So where is the government getting its money? They're conjuring money out of thin air on an industrial basis. They're buying $600 billion of mortgage bonds to force down the cost of home loans. And where are those mortgage bonds going to go? They're propping up the commercial paper market to avoid mass corporate default. Ben Bernanke, Barbasol Shave, is crazy. The man is proceeding as though he knows what he's doing. But all he's doing is printing money. And I believe this cascade of mistakes is going to end up with a deeper depression in exactly 2 years. Certainly these frauds are buying time, but it's not going to solve the deeper problem, which is that the Ponzi credit scheme eventually will have to pay its piper. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation. Savage.
We'll be right back.
right, hold it. Stop the music. I got breaking news for my millions of listeners on the Savage Nation. The judge has just ruled minutes ago in my case against CAIR, the Suspicious Council on American Islamic Relations, Inc. Now, as you well know, I sued them last year. And as you also well know, I spent a lot of money and a lot of time in the lawsuit, in a very meticulous and careful lawsuit that had great merit. But for reasons which I chose not to discuss in this show, I abruptly withdrew the complaint last November. And I did so for reasons that I will describe one day that I will not describe on this show, but that had nothing to do with legal reasons. At that time, CAIR and their wonderful attorneys from San Francisco, the left-wing attorneys, sued me for fees. Well, my lawyer took their case to the courts, and the judge at that time, in the very liberal San Francisco court, ruled in my favor and threw the case out. They said they're not entitled to legal fees. They were suing me for about $290,000 in legal fees, which was absurd to begin with. All right, so she threw the case out. They went ahead, and they wanted a motion for reconsideration. They shopped it back to the judge with some made-up ideas as to why she shouldn't have found against them. She just ruled minutes ago, Michael Savage versus Council on American Islamic Relations, order denying defendant's motion for reconsideration. In other words, she said to him, don't even bother coming to court because we're not going to hear it. And she gave the reasons why. And those of you who are legal, you know, legal-oriented and like legalese, I'm putting it up on michaelsavage.com. It's a big deal. Defendants have filed a motion for reconsideration of the court's November 12 order denying defendants' motion for attorney's fees. In other words, Judge Ilston already denied attorney's fees to them. She said, basically, there's no cause for you to get attorney's fees. So they went ahead, and they made up a story as to why she was wrong. And then they went back, and they said, we want a hearing on January 30th of 2009 to show why you should give us the money. She then wrote and said that the hearing is vacated. And she said, having considered the paper submitted and for good cause shown, defendant's motion is denied, meaning they are the defendant now, and their motion is denied. Now, of course, they can, and they probably will, try to shop this to the entire Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiels in order to see if they can screw me out of some money. But I don't know that the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiels is going to want to take the side of Council on American Islamic Relations in light of their recent behavior with regard to the Hamas rocket barrages against Israel. But I'll leave that to the wonderful people on the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiels. It's a very interesting story. And once again, I am involved in the news rather than just reporting on it. I'm one of the few talk show hosts who is actually in the business of, unfortunately, making the news rather than just reporting on it. I didn't ask for this fight. They did. And the fact of the matter is, they were just slapped in the face again by the very court that they thought they owned. And I want to thank each and every one of you who contributed to the Michael Savage Legal Defense Fund. Okay? Thank you, thank you, thank you. Again, CAIR just took another loss in the United States District Court for the Northern District of California. Read all about it. And I want to say congratulations to my lawyer, Dan Horowitz, who did a superb job. I would like to thank the judge, but I don't think that would be appropriate because she doesn't know me and I do not know her. Okay? If you'd like to talk about this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We are putting it up on michaelsavage.com. There's another story that is shocking. It just came out. You're not going to believe this, but Fannie Mae, that corrupt, rotten, government-owned home loan money bank, is going to demand as much as $16 billion in aid from the U.S. Treasury Department to stay afloat as deterioration in the housing market persists. As far as I am concerned, the board of directors of Fannie Mae should be in prison. They should be in orange jumpsuits, not getting another $16 billion to fly around on private jets and go around the world and dispense stupidity. Fannie's plan request announced today follows Freddie Mac, which said January 23rd that it will need as much as $35 billion more in federal aid. Do you hear this? They're demanding that we give them more money for their failure. This all goes back to Bonnie Frank and the Democrats. Bonnie Frank, in my opinion, should be indicted for what he's done in terms of the American taxpayer, forcing us to give mortgages to unqualified people who applied for them. This is so out of control that they're asking for more money. If you want to talk about it, call somebody else. If you want to talk about the topics I'm interested in, whether that be acetylcholine, cholinesterase inhibitors, mixed martial arts, fighting, tomatoes, potatoes, red peppers, or Michael Savage versus CAIR in the courts, And now even in a liberal court district, apparently there's still justice in America. I tell you, it gives me hope. It gives me hope as the only, let's say the most dominant conservative in the most liberal city in America. Let me put it to you that way. I am the most outspoken conservative in the most liberal city in America. Let's start with a headline. But, you know, in the courts, you have to admit, thus far, the courts have been extremely fair in terms of their findings. Had I not withdrawn my case for reasons other than legal reasons, I'm pretty sure I would have prevailed on the RICO charges. That's what I believe. And my attorney is too. And they ought to be really glad and you know, leave well enough alone that the case was withdrawn. Care if they had any brains would let this go, because the longer they push this, the more people are going to start to look at Michael Savage's RICO claims against them, and somebody's just liable to pick it up and run with it. My suggestion is that they take some happiness in where this stands and move on, but I don't think they will. Knowing how the radicals work in this country, I don't think their lawyers will. 1-800-449-18. This will not be discussed on Fox. Fix News Network will not discuss Michael Savage versus Care, because I am a part of the unknown, the untouched, the untouchable and the unwashables in America. If you're an illegal alien who rapes and murders, you get on the Fix News Network right pronto. You know, things of that nature. But if you're anybody who actually has a just cause, forget about Fix News Network or any of them. I don't care anymore. I'm way past caring. My mind is already in another world. It's in this world and it's in the next world at the same time. That's where I really am at, truthfully. I'm not worried about whether or not I'm on television or not on television. I mean, I had my television experience. I could do without it. I'm happy on radio. I do my radio, and I go home at the end of the day, and I think about the news, and I try not to get too upset over what's going on in this country. I try not to get overly upset over the socialist revolution that is occurring right under our eyes, which was started by Bush, will be finished by Obama. And make no mistake about it, Bush and Obama are one and the same. You may think, oh, they're so different. No, my friends. Bush and Paulson nationalized much of the American economy. You should say they're socialists. They are. Who was the first to call Bush a fiscal socialist? Yours truly. No one caught on to that. Michael Savage called Bush a fiscal socialist about 9 months ago. And, of course, nobody noticed it. But boy, was I right, unfortunately.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, you duped Obama maniacs, have gotten what you want. Something is wrong with this picture. But President Barack Hussein Obama has agreed to his first formal TV interview. It is not to ABC. It is not to NBC. It is not to CBS. It is not to CNN. But President Barack Hussein Obama has agreed to give his first formal TV interview as president with Al Arabiya. Now, what does that tell you? First interview with a foreign media outlet? Are you people not worried about this? Do you understand this? President Obama does first formal TV interview as president with Al Arabiya. That's the Arabic cable TV network. The interview was taped this evening, is set to air at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. It is based in Dubai, and Al Arabiya estimates it has a potential audience exceeding 23 million people in the Gulf region. Does that not worry you that his first interview would not be with an American outlet? 60 Minutes, left-wing, sycophants, ABC, CBS, NBC, the usual. Why would he give his first interview to an Arabic TV outlet? That's interesting. That is really interesting. Anybody have any opinions on this? Anybody want to talk about the Muslim world? Anybody want to understand why our president would choose to speak to the Muslim world instead of to the American world? That's very interesting. Very, very, very interesting. Do you think we owe an explanation to the Arab street for invading Iraq? I don't. Frankly, the Arab street never needed an explanation on the mass murder, torture, and rape rooms from Saddam Hussein. But somehow we're told that the Arab street needs an explanation from us because Bush stopped the mass murder, torture, and rape rooms. Interesting. See, liberals always feel the need to apologize to fake victims, and they never make time for the real victims. This is interesting. This is very interesting. First phone call, first interview, Al Arabiya. First executive order, close Gitmo. First enemy, Rush Limbaugh. What did you expect from this man? Did you expect anything different? This is really interesting to me, but if you don't want to talk about it, we'll talk about the topics I raised in the last hour. Speaker Pelosi says that birth control is good because the economy will benefit from fewer children. And, of course, she's the Italian grandmother from San Francisco who thinks that people who whip each other in public in leather outfits is something akin to the Catholic Church's best teachings. Obama signs a new executive order concerning the auto industry, trying to kill it while it's on its last legs. Unbelievable to me. We can talk about these topics or others right here on the Savage Nation. I announced in the last hour another victory. Not a small one at that, but CAIR continues to harass me, in my opinion. I withdrew my case for reasons I'm going to not talk about on this show, even though I had a great case. Very sound legally, both on the RICO and on the copyright claim. And after spending about $250,000, I withdrew it because of reasons I can't discuss on this program, but I will one day. And then they went after me for about $180,000, $190,000 in legal fees, which, of course, was inflated and absurd, in my opinion. And we challenged them on their demand for fees, and we won on the first go-around in a very liberal court from Judge Ilston. Well, they went and they wanted to have another hearing, January 30th, 09, to demand fees again. Today, the judge just ruled about an hour ago. She threw the case out again. Michael Savage versus CAIR, order denying defendant's motion for reconsideration. So although I'm the most, outspoken conservative in the San Francisco area, living in the most liberal city in America, apparently the most liberal court in America understands what justice is. You understand? 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to WOR New York. Margaret, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hello. It's a pleasure talking to you, Michael. Because I feel myself identified with you. I also am a conservative in the most liberal state, that is New York, and I live in Westchester.
So Westchester. Westchester is filled with deranged liberals who want to give their money away to people they never met. How come all the rich people of Westchester want higher taxes? Have you ever been able to figure that one out?
Well, these people...
I'm going to move on, that's all. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut the nice lady off, but I have to move it fast. It's a very fast show. Fast callers, you get it? But why would Obama choose to give his first TV interview to an Arabic channel? This should get CBS, ABC, NBC thinking, but hey, they've long shown they're incapable of original thought, which is why they got on the Obama train so long ago. Maybe now we're finding out who the secret donors are, you know, where all the money came from. Remember all that bundled money? Remember all that $700-800 million? Where do you think it came from? We were told it came from the man in the street. Little we know is the Arab street. New York, WOR, Sean, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, the reason I'm calling tonight is because I would like to comment on the fact that President Obama has taken the idea and ran with it to do his first interview overseas in the United Arab Emirates. My thoughts on this are that we are being betrayed as a nation. Not only that, our first hello from President Obama isn't to his American people, but obviously the ancestry of his father, the Islamic world, who he still has.
Well, we try to warn America. We brought it up over and over again. His middle name is Hussein. Hundreds of millions of dollars came flowing into his campaign from unknown sources. Maybe we're finding out something here.
The reason I'm calling tonight is because I want building.
Thank you. We're getting feedback off the can you guys please tell the callers to shut their radios off before I take them? Pittsburgh, PA. Douglas, go ahead. I know what you're calling about. Everyone's shocked to find this out. Obama does first formal TV interview as president with Al Arabiya. It just came out from ABC News. It's up on Drudge. It's shocking. It's a shocking story. This is not a small story. It is frightening, frankly. It is frightening. Maybe you liberals will come to understand what you have done here. Douglas, thank you for calling the Savage
Thanks,
Nation.
Mike.
Go ahead. What's on your mind?
My opinion on this is because of his background of being Muslim before, because his brother, his own brother in Africa, said that he was a Muslim. And also his background.
Do you remember how the left-wing media kept covering that up and making a mockery of anybody who raised the fact that he did go to a madrasas in Indonesia? Do you remember how they made a mockery of anybody who raised these questions and tried to turn us into what we're not? We are patriots. They try to turn us into racists.
What about this lawsuit that William Berg has, the former Attorney General of Pennsylvania?
Well, that's about the birth certificate. It's still up in the air. That's been ongoing. About 80 million people have signed a demand to see the real birth certificate. No one's ever seen it. That was put to rest by Governor Lingle in Hawaii for reasons I can never understand. But he is the president right now. I don't think we're going to undo that. But I think we better start raising our voices in unison, whether you voted for him or not, and start asking some questions before it's too late.
Exactly.
Many people feared this day would come. But this is only the beginning, my friend. This is not the end of the road. Why would Obama do his first formal TV interview as president with an Arabic news channel rather than with an American news channel? Can anyone answer this? New York City, Lisa, WOR, go ahead, please.
Hi. My biggest fear is that Obama's going to give an executive order to ban presidential elections in the next term. And also, regarding the interview, I think he's a sleeper agent bringing down the United States.
Well, many people fear that. And I know we're not supposed to say it because those in the media who are on drugs, who urinate on themselves on their MSNBC desks, will make a laughter out of you, Lisa. You understand that?
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know about the sleeper agent, but I'm not sure where his loyalties lie. Let me put it to you that way.
I don't think anything either.
This really raises this issue and makes it front and center. Something's wrong with this picture. Why would Obama give his first formal TV interview as president with Al Arabiya? What does that say? You'll see how many people in the midstream media run with this story. Only Drudge had the guts to pick it up and run with it, the man they attack because they're jealous of him. But you have to ask yourself, why would Obama do this, knowing what kind of questions it would raise out here in the land that he is supposedly the ruler of? I'm very worried about his ruling by dictatorship, meaning by executive order. I'm shocked that although he's given out, how many now, Baywell? Six? Executive orders in less than a week? Five, six? The media hasn't noticed that these are the highest number of executive orders ever used by an incoming president in American history, so far as I know. Am I right about that? Is there any other president who issued more executive orders in a shorter period of time than Obama? Is there any other president in American history who gave his first formal interview to a foreign country? Think about it, folks. All of you deluded Obama maniacs, all of you Kool-Aid drinkers, maybe you and I will wake up and realize that the country's been taken. I don't know. I don't know if you're capable of it. I kind of doubt it. I think all you're looking at is whether or not you won, and you have no care about whether or not America won. Yeah, maybe the Democrats won, but did America really win? That's the real question. Sure, the Democrats won. With Bush the putz as president and McCain the putz as the candidate, of course Obama won. After a guy who stumbled his way through 8 years, every sentence he made a fool of America. Anyone who was articulate could have beaten them. But there were legitimate questions about Barack Hussein Obama. A, he was the most liberal senator in American history. That should worry you. Just as the most conservative American senator would worry anybody, so should the most liberal senator have worried you. But it didn't worry you. It should have worried you. And because the Republicans threw the election by bringing up this old warhorse hack, John McCain, who ran only to run the election in favor of Obama, that should have worried you too. Well, now we're living with it. He gives his first interview as president with Al Arabiya. Who was the first person he attacks? A conservative talk show host. Think about it. Obama chose to attack a conservative talk show host rather than Osama bin Laden. What does that tell you about the man's priorities, how screwed up they are, and where he's coming from, and how he's going to take all means necessary to destroy the opposition in this country and to destroy all dissension? That's why I said last week, call me Dr. Dissent. Call me Dr. Dissent. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This shocking news story just broke. I mean, two of them today. The bigger one, of course, is that President Obama has done his first formal television interview as president, not with the American people on one of our networks, but with Al Arabiya, which is shocking, frankly. And I think many people are going to start to ask questions. There may be some buyer's remorse, finally. The man has also passed the greatest number of executive orders of any modern president. This should bother you. This should bother you. New York, Lutzi, WOR, go ahead, please.
It's a very smart move from the President Obama, because the terrorists, you know, they use the TV and the radio and the internet to brainwash the Muslim world mind. So he's going straight to play their game, I guess, and to fight them. And if the Obama going to go on the CNN, most of the Arab people, they don't have CNN, so the interview going to go nowhere.
Wait a minute. If much of the Arab people don't have CNN, why wouldn't he have gone on CNN first to talk to the American people? Why wouldn't he have first spoken to his own countrymen who elected him?
No, I think this message is going straight to the Arab people who they've been brainwashed by all the Arab
people. Well, wait a minute. If the Arab people don't get ABC or CBS or NBC, why would Obama not have spoken to the American people first?
You know, this is very important for him now to fix what's on the ground. And what's
well, again,
on the ground,
you're not hearing me. Apparently, you're not following your attempts to be logical. You're saying the Arabic people do not get American networks. I agree with you. So what would it have hurt for Obama to have spoken in a calm voice to the American people who elected him? He's the president of America, not of Arabia.
I agree, but this is one of the, I guess, one of the tools to fight the terrorists.
Yeah, but you don't understand what I'm saying to you. Doesn't this look rather odd, since there were so many questions about his alleged Muslim background? Don't you think this will feed people's suspicions of his loyalties?
Okay, so are we going to complain about every move he makes? Then we're going to stay on the same side?
Yes, we're going to complain about every move he makes. That's the way it's done in America. That's the way America works. We don't live in a dictatorship. Didn't you complain about every move Bush made?
Well, no comment on that one.
I'm asking you, didn't the media jump down Bush's throat on everything he did? They complained about the expensive inauguration of Bush. When Obama outspent him, they said nothing about the inauguration of Obama. Why is that?
Yeah, but the problem, Bush, he didn't try to fix what he made wrong.
All right. In other words, your mind is made up. Don't confuse it with the facts. No, my friend, something's wrong with this picture. Why is Obama giving his first major interview, not to the American people, but to the Arab street? This is amazing to me. His first presidential interview is with an Arab TV network. This is interesting. You don't have voters' remorse? None of you have voters' remorse. Five executive orders in a week, first interview to the Arab media, first person he attacks is a conservative in talk radio rather than Osama bin Laden, and none of you have buyers' remorse. That's interesting. Sacramento, Michael, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I'm not surprised one bit by this move. I'm kind of surprised that you find it surprising, because he basically thinks he has us all in his back pocket already, and half of us, I guess he doesn't realize, voted for another net senator just slightly better than him. And frankly, I think he doesn't have anything to say to us. We already know he doesn't like talking to the media if he thinks he's going to get challenged.
Yes. Yes, he's very thin-skinned when it comes to anyone asking him a real question. Why is he not given a press conference yet to the American media? Not that they're capable of asking real questions. As we saw right off the bat, he asks questions, pre-selected questions. And he asks reporters to ask him questions, only the reporters he's already decided to ask by cue card. I saw that at the first one he ran with the press.
Give interviews, he wants to give speech.
The media should be all over this. Every news outlet in America should be shocked by this tonight. But you know they won't. if they were capable of being shocked by the reality of Obama giving his first major TV interview to an Arab media outlet, Obama would not be president today. Don't you understand that?
Of course.
Something's wrong with this picture. Something is wrong with this picture. If you care to talk about this, my friends, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. None of your supporters of Obama are upset. You don't understand this, do you? What this means.
Savage.
So let's get things straight. In his first week, President Barack Hussein Obama issued an executive order to close Gitmo without knowing where to send the terrorists. Then he passed another executive order about treating terrorists very nicely. Now his first TV appearance is on a Middle East TV network. Is he the president of the Middle East or the president of the United States of America? Now, let me be very clear. There's no reason he should not talk to the Muslims and the Arabs in the Middle East. However, this is a terrible, terrible move on his part from the point of view of public relations. Remember, half of America didn't vote for him. Half of America did not vote for him. Moreover, we owe no explanation to the Arabs. They should thank us for liberating the Iraqi people. They should thank us for sending our best and our brightest to Afghanistan to liberate the people from the 9th century throwbacks who have tried to hijack Afghanistan. Well, you wanted change. You're getting change. Where did you read that all change is good? You're getting change. You're getting change. But who said that all change is good? He offered hope, but was it hope to you or hope to the people on the Arab street? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. New York City, Dan, WOR calls. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage. What Obama is doing is surrendering U.S. to the rest of the world. We are surrendering in this war on terror, and that's what he's doing. It's clear to everybody. These are the first steps, but that's where he's going. He's not the American president.
Well, there's a lot in what you just said. He is the American president, but by talking to an Arab news channel, didn't his advisors tell him this might set off some serious doubts, even amongst people who voted for him?
No, I don't think they have any doubts in the U.S. because it's never going to get reported to the majority of people because the mainstream media is in love with him.
You're right. The midstream media won't even report that he did this. I get that. Now, he's definitely going to talk to Iran next. That's like Chamberlain talking to Hitler. And I have called Obama the Chamberlain of our time. And Chamberlain wasn't a traitor. Chamberlain was just a socialist pacifist who thought he was doing the right thing by talking to Hitler in 1939. He didn't do it to hurt England. You know that.
I don't give Obama the credit for not knowing that he's doing wrong. I don't. He's malicious in his actions.
Why? What makes you say that?
Because his politics come up. He's from the Chicago machine. He's a left-wing, hard left street organizer from the Chicago machine. And I think he believes that the U.S. is an evil country, and now he's here to make it better. And I also believe he's not a U.S. citizen. I believe that piece of it, but that's not going to change his position. He's still the president. But I think he's naive in any
of it. I hear you. This is very worrisome, by the way. This is very worrisome, Dan. Thank you for calling. Our next caller is from Springfield, Massachusetts. Her name is Shirley. Shirley, go ahead, please.
Yes, I believe President Obama is giving the first interview to the Arab countries because of diversity.
What do you mean, because of diversity? What does that mean?
Because he wants to appear as though he's embracing everyone. And
embracing everyone, what, by insulting the people who elected him?
Well, I didn't elect him, but I believe that is the
truth. Wait a minute, let's start from the top. Don't you think Obama, just for the sake of public relations and for the, let us say, to put people's questions at rest about his loyalties and about his background, because there are tens of millions of people who believe that his loyalties may not lie with America. Let's be very clear. And we've not stopped believing that. What message does this send to the 47 million people who did not vote for him? That we don't count?
In your face. It's in
He's in. Okay, so it's the Saul Alinsky school of take it to the enemy and give it to him right in their face. Drop dead. I don't care what you think about. I don't care what you think about me. If I appear with an Arab hedge loan, tens of millions of white people have lost jobs to diversity, which is why the country's crippled right now, because of all the incompetents who are in places they don't belong, because they didn't get there through quality nor through achievement. They got there strictly through government manipulation. Apparently, the great one is swearing in the new head of the Treasury Department, Geithner. Let's hear it.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office.
On which I'm about to enter.
On which I'm about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Of course, this is preposterous that Geithner can faithfully execute the office. The man is a tax dodger, worked for the Federal Reserve Bank in New York. He's one and the same of the boys who have run the country off the rails. And of course, he makes a perfect Treasury Secretary at that. So there's nothing shocking about this. And there'll be no, by the way, there was no griping about him on Fox News Network. They all said he's a wonderful man for the job. The sock puppet, Neil Cavuto, said, oh, he's the best one. Oh, this is just a small dust-up, not paying taxes. Neil, you know, Neil, a couple of years ago you had something. You're an embarrassment. But today you hit a new low by letting Jerry Rivers do what he did on your network.
Mr. President,
truthfully.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President, and thanks to my many friends and colleagues for being here tonight.
Another
my
boy
wife,
from NYU.
My wife, Carol, stood beside me as I took this oath of office, as she has twice before in this
Who
building.
Who cares about your wife? Tell us how you're going to save the country, you creep, you.
Extraordinary grace and support. She has this
extraordinary grace. High school valedictorian.
And
yeah, it's her wisdom. There's always the wife's wisdom until they get caught with a boy in the backseat of a car.
Studying for their midterm exams. I hope they're studying. I miss them very much, and I'm very proud of them.
Do you believe this?
My terrific family is represented here tonight by my father, Peter Geithner, and my brother, David.
Can you believe what you're listening to? The country's in the middle of a meltdown, and this schmuck's telling us about how happy he is to be the new Treasury Secretary.
The important gift of showing me the world as a child. They took us to live in Zambia and Rhodesia,
and
then to India and to Thailand.
Oh, that should help. That should help. That should be really great.
Through the eyes of others.
Oh, my. How about America through the eyes of Americans, you putz?
Of America on the world that led me to work in government.
Oh, yeah, right. It's because you couldn't get a job in the private sector.
20 years ago. And I had at Treasury the wonderful experience of working with smart and dedicated people serving their country.
Serving their country? They bankrupted us, you schmuck.
In an environment where our obligation...
Do you understand that we are being ruled not by the best and the brightest, but by the dumbest and the lowest? These are not smart people. These are bureaucrats. Do you know the difference between a smart man and a bureaucrat? You're listening to a bureaucrat on the other side of the microphone. He is a lifer in government.
And to limit government intervention to where it is essential to protect our financial system.
Did you hear what he just said? He's not going to rein in Wall Street, in other words. That's why they picked
that
the stooge.
Is critically important today because it is the
Did you hear what he just said? No government regulation of the gangsters of Wall Street under his regime. That's why they picked the schmuck.
In the world we confront today, Treasury has to be and Treasury will be a source of bold initiative.
What does that mean?
We're in a moment of maximum challenge for our economy and for our country.
Look at this double talk. No regulation.
Is to move quickly to help you do what the country asks you to do.
Yeah, what's that?
To launch the programs that will bring economic
Give away more money, in other words, to your cronies on Wall Street that you went to Yale with, or your friends that you met in Uganda.
Opportunities it provides our citizens. To restore trust in our financial system.
Oh, yeah, you'll restore trust, Guy, for sure.
To make our tax system better at rewarding work and investment. To restore
All right, I heard. Turn it off already. It's a schoolboy giving a schoolboy speech. I don't have any patience for it. All right, turn it back on just for a minute.
To help me meet that challenge and to restore to all Americans the promise of a better future. Oh, I want to thank Larry Summers, who has taught me so much about economic policy.
Oh, another genius.
Math,
Larry Summers, another genius, worked at Harvard, a great genius.
I'm fortunate he is willing
a real genius, didn't run a hot dog stand, he worked at Harvard. A real genius, let him try to run a business with the government regulation the way it is today, with what you have to answer here in the state of California. Go try to run a business, you schmucks.
This great privilege of working for you.
A privilege.
Eager to get to work.
I can't take it. Turn it off. That's all. That's our new Treasury Secretary. Okay. You know why he was picked? Because he won't offer any challenges to the establishment on Wall Street. He'll let them to continue to buy $50 million airplanes with bailout money. You read that one, didn't you, today? Could you believe this story? Could you believe that Citibank, as bankrupt as it is, are going ahead with the purchase of a $50 million airplane? No one's stopping them. Why? Why won't the government stop them? Because they are the government. They're one and the same. They're one and the same. I'm getting too excited. I couldn't sleep last night. I don't like this. I'm getting mild tachycardia at night thinking of the show now. I had no idea I'd wake up to this. I had no idea that I'd wake up to Obama giving his first interview on television to a foreign audience, not to the American people. I had no idea I'd wake up to a new Treasury Secretary who would say, no, despite all of the excesses of Wall Street, I am not going to rein in Wall Street. I'm not going to pass any new regulations. In other words, what he's saying is Madoff did nothing wrong. You know that the people who oversaw Wall Street, the SEC, should be in jail. You know that the chairman of the SEC should have been arrested by now and indicted and be facing charges of criminal conduct, if not whatever they would have brought charges against him. But to this day, that Republican prat boy, who George Bush handpicked to be the head of the SEC, permitted men like Madoff to do what they did, in my opinion, permitted these banks to do what they did, permitted the brokerage houses to do what they did, and not one of the people at the SEC has yet to be indicted. And by the way, ask yourself why Madoff, the man who had allegedly admitted to the FBI that he was the head of a $50 billion Ponzi scheme, ask yourself why he is still enjoying the luxury of his own penthouse in Manhattan. Ask yourself why he's not in prison. Well, you have to try to follow the money. And you have to come to understand that he did not act alone. In fact, the more I think about the Ponzi scheme and Madoff, the more I read about it, I believe that Madoff was only the front man for other interests. That's what I've come to. I don't think he worked alone at all. I think he was a front man for other interests. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We have two major stories on the Savage Nation. One is that Obama has given his first TV interview, and it is not to the American public. It is to the Arab public. And it is not to an American news outlet. It is to Al Arabiya TV. I believe this is going to set off shockwaves, not in the hardcore Democrats, not in the hardcore liberals. It's going to set off shockwaves in the many conservatives who voted for him in order to spite the Republican Party. It's going to set off shockwaves in many of the people who didn't truly understand this man's mixed background in terms of his loyalties and what they might or might not be. And the other questions that surrounded Obama during the campaign, they're going to start worrying about it and coming up with buyer's remorse. And even if this is an innocent mistake, it shows a naivete, by the way, that's very worrisome on the part of Obama and his handlers. The other story is that Michael Savage versus CAIR, it's up on michaelsavage.com. The judge has found in my favor again. Thank you for supporting me. And now here's a new story for you to think about one way or the other. Gold has just jumped above $900 on a buying spree. $900 a troy ounce, hitting a 3.5-month high in dollar terms, and posting an all-time highs in euro and sterling. Why is that? Money seeking refuge from equities and bond markets. It says traders, and we don't mean T-R-A-I-T-O-R-S, investors in continental Europe and the U.K. were pouring money into gold exchange-traded funds in order to hedge their bets, in other words. Now, this is something for you to think about, and there are other sides to the story. We can't suddenly say gold's going to jump to 1,000 and then to 2,000 because certain other things have occurred at the same time, and you have to study the whole picture to understand, and I suggest you read the whole story. San Diego, Catherine, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, hi. It's an honor to talk to you. I think this is absolutely bizarre that he is giving this interview. I mean, even if I was a Democrat, I would think the same thing. And I think what he's doing like in his first few days, citing the executive orders he signed. I think he's paying back the foreigners that contributed to his campaign. And I think he's doing it...
Well, it's certainly a question as to why he would go to them instead of ABC, CBS, or NBC, or CNN, or Fox. What does that tell you about where some of the bundled money may have come from? I mean, let's level with each other. We're not naive. We're a nation of very intelligent people. Obama raised an unprecedented $500, $600, $700, $800. No one knows how much money. No one even knows where the money came from. It started to occur in bundled masses. And many of us questioned where the money was coming from, while others were dancing around the Obama pole, worshiping the gold dragon. I'm asking you if this does not answer some of the questions. Why can't we ask this question? Does this tell us that he's paying back his investors or contributors? Wisconsin Scott, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just would like to make the comment that it just seems to me with this whole thing about Obama speaking to the Arabic world is it's to me he's like trying or he's thinking about he's leader of the world.
I don't know. That's neither here nor there. I mean, I think that the several million people in Washington who trashed the National Mall, the several million people who destroyed the National Mall, which of course is not being shown by the midstream media because they don't want to show you the outcome of liberal activity. They trashed the National Mall. It will cost tens of millions of dollars to fix what they did. When you stand before several million people, you start to think that you are a messiah, and you start to think that you can do no wrong. But as Lord Acton wrote many, many decades ago, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I believe that Obama believes he has absolute power, and he is acting accordingly. Mississippi, Anita, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, let me explain it to you guys who don't understand, like you're 4 years old. The man does not think he is a messiah. Picture the United States as the Titanic. It's sinking. He went down to the hole, to the Arabic nation, to put a plug in it, to stop the
Now, I realize that you don't have the education to finish a sentence with any degree of literacy, although you accuse others of being an infant. I would challenge you as to how far you went in school and what you've actually read. You are wrong. Obama has done his first formal TV interview, not with the American people on an American network, but with Al Arabiya to an Arabic audience. That should worry you.
What education do you have? Because you're talking to an educated woman just because I'm from Mississippi does not...
I understand that. Well, I have a PhD in... Listen, stop running at the mouth. I'm not one of your students. I have an earned PhD from the University of California at Berkeley and two master's degrees. I've written 25 books. Does that help you with the question?
Say it again.
I'm not going to say it again. What, are you too dumb to understand what I said? You didn't like what you heard?
It wasn't to pay off.
You didn't hear what I said. You didn't hear what I said, but you want to challenge me on an educational level. You're barking up the wrong tree, my friend. Okay? You can't hold a candle to my education. You don't know what you're talking about. The man has gone to the Arab street rather than to the American street. Why doesn't that worry you, Anita?
They left trash out, and that's to be expected. You're going to have trash when you have 2.5 million people.
What? I'm sorry, what did you just say?
I said the Democrats who went to see him, the whites, the blacks, the Mexicans, and everybody else who went to see him in Washington, they did not trash Washington. Of course, they left some trash behind, but that's what you pay.
I said they trashed the National Mall. That's an obvious reality. But you didn't read it in your local newspaper, did you? Because they don't want to make anything that Obama does negative. But you're getting off the track because you don't have a logical mind. You're going to make the audience follow you into your confusion. The issue is not trashing of Washington, which his followers did. The issue is that the man has given his first formal TV interview to the Arab street on an Arab network. Don't you think that's a question that people should be asking themselves as to why?
That's where the problem is, not to get paid back. The blacks who put him in office, the whites who put him in office, the Mexicans who put him in office, and everybody else who put him in office, they contribute dollars, 50 cents, a quarter to his campaign. It's something unprecedented, something that has...
But you're not answering the question. You're going off at the mouth without thinking. You don't know what you're talking about. I just ask you what that has to do with him giving his first formal TV interview as president with Al Arabiya rather than with an American network. It is unprecedented. Why would he have done that, Anita?
He informal interview to Robin Roberts.
You know, ma'am, I hope to God that you are not a teacher, because I pity the poor students who have to put up with your illogic and your emotional outbreaks. You are not qualified to be a teacher. You're not even qualified to call a talk show. But you're exactly who Obama used to get where he is. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Let's review. First item, Bill Kristol, the call boy, so-called conservative Bill Kristol, who was known for running his daddy's magazine owned by News Corporation, the Meekly Standard, today wrote a column in the New York Times praising Obama and declaring an end to the era of conservatism. I suspect his dinner with Obama the other week certainly helped let him see the light from the left side of the aisle. Which leads us to the next question. Have you stopped watching false conservative outlets like Fox News? What was the last straw for you? Who is the biggest fake conservative in the government media complex? Will the Republicans actually lose more seats in Congress during the next election because of their continued weakness and pandering to the Democrats? Why is the disgraced Geraldo Rivera on Fox News defending Blagojevich and attacking those who are impeaching him?
What's the charge that really will resonate with the people of Illinois? Tell us now.
Whether you want to talk about illegal hiring and falsification of hiring
charge?
Documents.
What is the charge that you are impeaching this man for?
That we laid out a 13-count article of impeachment, ranging on articles of
bringing
illegal
flu
hiring.
Medicine? Bringing in flu vaccine?
Spending millions of dollars on flu vaccines, which the FDA told him
today,
he would not be allowed to bring in.
Does his corrupt dealings on that Senate seat have anything to do with the fact that you are stripping him of his office in this kangaroo court?
Did you hear the insanity in that voice? Amazing. Topic number two was Obama destroys the auto industry. Today, Obama announced he would allow more stringent emissions and fuel efficiency standards on cars.
The federal government must work with, not against, states to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. California has shown bold and bipartisan leadership through its effort to forge 21st century standards, and over a dozen states have followed its lead. But instead of
now, this is interesting. This is classic academic pinhead.
This refusal to lead risks the creation of a confusing and patchwork set of standards that hurts the environment and the auto industry.
This is classic academic egghead thinking. Doesn't he understand the U.S. auto industry is almost finished as it is? But no, he has to take his left-wing agenda and follow it through to the very end, no matter what the cost. Is Obama's new slogan a Prius in every garage? Then, of course, there was Nancy Pabulum. Nancy Pelosi has said that birth control will benefit the economy by destroying children, that is, by not letting them be born.
The contraception is... will reduce cost to the state and to the federal government.
So no apologies for that?
No apologies, no. We have to deal with the consequences of the downturn in our economy.
Wow. Have we moved into a Chinese-style one-child policy under Nancy Pelosi, the Catholic grandmother? All right, play Blue Monday.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Tuesday, oh, Tuesday, I'm so tired, got no-
We've been talking here on the Savage Nation about Barack Obama signing an executive order that calls for the closing of Guantanamo Bay. What is he going to do with those held there, those murderers? Is he seriously thinking about transferring them all to the United States so they can get lawyered up from NYU and Harvard? So far, he hasn't said so. Well, here to talk about this is former Reagan defense official KT McFarland from ktmcfarland.com. KT, what in the world is Obama thinking?
Hi, Michael. Great to be with you again. And I think that this whole Guantanamo issue is something you've been onto right from the start. Closing Guantanamo, as Obama has said he's going to do, is a disaster. It would be like being in the middle of a fight to the death and deciding to tie your hands behind your back. But the interesting point here is that Obama hasn't closed Guantanamo. He's merely announced that he intends to close Guantanamo. So I think, actually, it's a pretty clever move on his part. He can make a big public relations demonstration of it, and his left wing is very happy because, as you know, and you have pointed out, all they want to do is close Gitmo. And he also gives a sop to the international community, which has been very critical of Guantanamo and American torture, etc. But at the same time, he's got the problem, same problem Bush has. What do you do with these guys? I mean, what do you do with these dangerous terrorists? Because you can't send them abroad. Nobody wants them. The only countries that do want them are the ones who either will perform terrorist tactics and on their own and will torture them, or countries like Yemen who will effectively release them. So they can't be sent abroad. But on the other hand, if they're not going to be left in a prison like Guantanamo, where are they going to go? They can't come to America to stand trial, because as soon as these terrorists arrive on American soil, they will have all the constitutional rights of an American citizen, which means that if they're put on trial, then you've got all those rules of evidence and the Miranda rights and all the rest. And a lot of these terrorists have been captured by American military. Well, our soldiers are not, you know, they're not like CSI Miami, reading people their Miranda rights and gathering intelligence. So we could easily see a situation where if these terrorists came to the United States, had the rights of American citizens in our court system, none of them would be convicted of much of anything. Not because they're not guilty, but because the evidence, the rules of evidence are so stringent. The other thing is that their lawyers, the terrorist lawyers, if they come to the United States, they'll say, well, these confessions are all coerced, they're under torture, they're not valid. So let's just think through, what's Obama going to do? He can't send them abroad, he can't bring them to the United States, but he can't try them in American courts either. So the other tricky thing about what Obama has just done is he has closed the military tribunal courts, which in fact were just starting to work, but he has not closed off the possibility that he could open another kind of court, like a national security court, to try terrorists. Because the one thing is for sure, if these people get out and if they go around the world, they don't just go join the PTA in downtown Amsterdam. They join terrorist organizations. A good tenth of them that have been released from Guantanamo, we know, are actively involved in terrorist activities, including the one man who's just been released and is in Yemen. One thing, Michael, that I thought was interesting, I was just in Great Britain last week debating at the Oxford Union about Bush's foreign policy. And I've got to tell you, they hate Bush. They hate Americans. They think that America and George Bush are personally responsible for all the terrorist activities in the world, that they bear no responsibility themselves, the jihadists bear no responsibility, it's all America's fault. But the interesting thing is, at the same time, last week there was a little-known trial in Manchester of two British terrorists, British subjects who had affiliations, second-generation Pakistani affiliations, and they were convicted of being al-Qaeda members. And not only was it an interesting conviction because it's the first one of its kind, but it really pulled the veil back on how al-Qaeda and terrorist operations work. They recruit among locals. They want to get second and third generation British young men and women because they know when these guys can blend in, it's much easier for them to perform terrorist acts in their country. And they also know that when they run up against law enforcement, because they're British subjects, they have full rights and responsibilities. That's why the Gitmo issue is so much more important than just on the face of it. We in America have one advantage in the war on terror, and that's that most of the terrorists who are aiming at America are not American citizens and therefore don't have full American rights in our legal system. If we tie our hands behind our back and say, okay, we're closing Guantanamo, you're going to be tried in the civilian courts, we're going to have the same problem Great Britain did. We are going to soon be basically giving those people, at least with regard to our legal system, full citizen rights. And that is a great disadvantage on fighting the war on terror. And the final thing, you know, Michael, if there is, God forbid, but if there is another terrorist attack on the United States of some sort, and it can be traced back to the fact that it was laxity in Guantanamo or release of terrorists who went back out like a virus into the world and infected the world, there will be a huge political price to pay for Barack Obama. So my guess is that he's actually been pretty clever about this. He's thrown the bone to the far left, saying, I'm against Guantanamo, I'm closing the courts. But he hasn't ruled out the possibility of trying them again in military tribunals, which would be the right way to do it. So while he's closing this Guantanamo, who knows, a year from now he could be opening his own. He just won't call it Guantanamo. So thanks, Michael, and particularly thanks for bringing this whole issue to everybody's attention. If it weren't for guys like you, I'm not sure that we wouldn't have Guantanamo closed tomorrow and all the problems that that would bring with it. Thanks a lot, and this has been KT McFarland.
Thank you for your report, KT. This is the Savage Nation. You know how I felt about Obama's inauguration speech, full of sound and fury signifying nothing. It seems the main goal for the Obama machine is for everybody to feel good. No real answers to anything in the real world. But if we feel better about it, the world will be a better place. Dr. Peter Breggin joins us now for a report on what he saw from Obama's inauguration speech.
Thanks, Michael. This is Dr. Peter Breggin. I am a psychiatrist, and I want to help you live like an American. Today's subject, how can we bring the nation together? There's a lot of talk about coming together lately. The hope is that Barack Obama, with his charisma, his eloquence, and his liberality, can bring us together. As a relatively young psychiatrist in the late 60s and early 70s, I worked a lot on issues of coming together. I led encounter groups, for example, aimed at bringing people to understand each other through leadership and communication and shared feelings. A couple of decades later, hopefully a lot wiser, I was adjunct professor at George Mason's Premier Institute of Conflict Analysis and Resolution. From my experience, a genuine and lasting coming together cannot be brought about through a charismatic leader or even through high hopes and a shared passion. Let's look at family conflict as an example. We all have a lot of experience with that. We hope that husbands and wives, for example, can resolve their conflicts, perhaps with a direction from a counselor or a minister who helps them communicate with each other. But it doesn't work that way. To make the marriage work, husband and wife must deal with underlying value conflicts, such as marital fidelity, taking responsibility for earning a living, sharing chores and other household responsibilities, sex and other expressions of love, and finding agreement on basic approaches to disciplining and caring for children. And let's not forget one of the biggest sources of conflict in the family, saving money and spending money and making a budget. Does that sound politically familiar? For a family to succeed, individual vested interests have to become shared interests. This requires shared values. Early in American history, the leadership and the citizens began to divide into acrimonious political parties based on conflicts in political values. Not everyone wanted a constitution or a bill of rights. Some wanted a strong government, some a weak government. Some wanted a republic led by educated and propertied individuals. Others looked more toward a democracy with emphasis on each person's participation and vote. Some felt more aligned with Great Britain and some with France. Some identified with business and commerce and some with agriculture. But in these early days of our nation, the quality of the conflict and the controversy was on a much higher level. Leaders and ordinary citizens alike thought about and debated first principles and values. Sure, there might have been a lot of personal infighting, as there is whenever human beings are in conflict, but they kept coming back to principles and values. and most of them shared a common set of underlying ideals and political assumptions. They wanted the government to defend individual freedom and to promote personal responsibility. They rejected the idea of a government generous to the point of encouraging graft and the misuse of money and dependence on the part of the citizens. President Obama is not unaware of the importance of values. In his acceptance speech, he tried to bring us together by offering a broad spectrum of those values. My ears perked up when I heard the words freedom and responsibility repeated on several occasions. I especially liked his sonorous call for a new era of responsibility. That's a lot of what Live Like an American is about, responsibility in our political and personal lives. But in response to the same speech, other people were perking up over more liberal and left-wing code words and concepts, from Bush bashing to the promise of more government entitlements and expenditures. Obama's speech became a giant handout of values, something for everyone and nothing of substance, nothing that the American nation can really rally around. President Obama tried to dismiss the critical issue of large government versus small government by calling for effective government. That's clever, but what is effective? Effective about what? Effective in regard to what interest groups and especially what enduring values? Modern politicians don't like to express their first principles and their underlying values, if they even have any. I believe in small government, a maximum of freedom and a lot of individual responsibility. An effective government would implement those values by reducing its size, increasing personal and economic freedom, and calling for individual responsibility. In this current crisis, aid would be given, as it is being given, to people who can no longer sustain themselves and their families, and especially to children. But there would be no bailouts for giant industries and unions. There can be no meaningful or lasting coming together around a charismatic leader, high hopes, or good feelings. We must rally around basic American values. We need to educate and to remind each other about political liberty and personal responsibility. As long as our citizens remain relatively uninformed about what makes America great, we will fumble around in the dark instead of finding each other in the bright light of America's glorious principles. That once again brings us to what I call the primary principles, the refrain of my weekly report. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. This is Dr. Peter Breggin, urging you to live like an American. You can find me at Breggin.com. That's Breggin.com. Now back to Michael.
Thank you, Dr. Breggin. Another empty speech that history will immediately forget. This is the Savage Nation. The last of the troops have left Gaza, even though some say that the job there was not completed. There's no question that Israel was able to hurt Hamas and their terror organization, but did they actually do enough before caving into the pressure from the UN for a ceasefire? Our president has now spoken out and said that Israel should open the Gaza border. Wow! Brigitte Gabriel is the author of the book They Must Be Stopped and president of ActForAmerica.org. She's been following this story for us and joins us now with her report on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. Israel finished its offensive in Gaza, and the world is trying to deal with the aftermath. Just like after every time Israel finally reacts to Palestinian aggression, we are again talking about solutions, rebuilding, and moving towards that elusive, quote, lasting peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. The problem is this. The Palestinians today are not one unified group with one representative who can speak on their behalf as it was under Yasser Arafat. Ever since Hamas came to power in 2005, the whole dynamic of the negotiation process, the Palestinian people, and what their wishes are have changed. When the world negotiated the Oslo Accord in 2003 and later the talks about the roadmap to peace with Abbas, the Palestinian Authority actually represented the Palestinian people. Today, Hamas is a separate Palestinian government operating in Gaza, with a charter specifically demanding the destruction of Israel, while Fatah represents the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank and actually negotiates with Israel. And they are die-hard enemies. While the more moderate Fatah came to the realization that you have to tone down violence in order to advance your cause cleverly with Israel through negotiation, Hamas decided to take the violence route and rallied the Palestinians in Gaza, who believed in the same vision to split from the Palestinian Authority. As far as the Palestinians in Gaza are concerned, a holy jihad against Israel is the only way to wipe the state of Israel off the map. They were not concerned with living side by side with peace. They were committed to fighting Israel till death. And Hamas is feeling their oats in pushing the jihad agenda against Israel. They have a lot of non-Muslim sympathizers across the world who have been caught up in the anti-Israel fervor in the past 10 years. It has very strong Muslim allies in the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and the mother bear, Iran, providing nurturing, training, and armament to Hamas. Sunday, one of Hamas's representatives, Osama Hamdan, said the Palestinian Authority, quote, must end its peace talks and security coordinations with Israel if it ever expects to reconcile with Hamas. He also vowed that Hamas will continue to bring arms to Gaza. The huge mistake Israel made is stopping the operation and agreeing to a ceasefire while it had Hamas almost in its palm. After weeks of bombardment, Hamas was weak, its leaders hiding in tunnels, unable to receive supplies like they used to before the operation, and Israel had a chance to completely take over the crossing with Egypt and force Hamas to surrender. Only then could Israel have really achieved success through its operation and forced the Palestinians to come to the negotiation table, humiliated and forced to comply with international pressure to stop launching rockets on Israel. Michael, Hamas only understands force and absolute victory. Because Israel stopped short of defeating Hamas and ensuring its decapitation, it literally handed the public relation victory over to Hamas, just like it did in Lebanon after its war with Hezbollah. Hamas is still today dedicated to Israel's destruction. Hamas has international contacts and is a part of a worldwide network of terrorists backed by a petrodollar-rich, oil-producing country, Iran, which is also on the verge of obtaining nuclear weapons. This Hamas victory against Israel now emboldens not only the variety of terrorist organizations in the Middle East and abroad, but also Iran. President Obama came out Friday urging Israel to open up the Gaza border with Egypt, allowing the Palestinians to bring in goods and commercial products. The fact that President Obama would even suggest that shows that he lacks the knowledge of the forces on the ground and the political dynamic of the different Islamic terrorist groups working together with Hamas. Even though Egypt is headed by President Mubarak, who came out forcefully along with Saudi Arabia and Jordan against Hamas, Egypt has no power over the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood organization, who is working actively with Hamas in a common bond of holy jihad against the Jews. Even if Israel agreed to open the border, trusting that Egypt would work to ensure that arms would not be smuggled to Hamas from Egypt, the government policies do not represent the wishes of the people on the ground, who are members of the Muslim Brotherhood, who dig tunnels out of their homes in Egypt and send weapons to Hamas. The problem, Michael, with opening the border with Egypt for the commercial goods to rebuild Gaza, such as cement, metal, and glass, to be transported is very risky. Hamas terrorists built rockets from pipes important for a sanitation plant. Hamas still controls Gaza, and Hamas would even acquire these materials either through capturing the trucks or by intimidating the builders and resell the materials in order to build its financial war chest to buy weapons. Israeli intelligence sources also recently found in Iranian leased ships anchored 10 miles to sea in Egyptian waters with weapons packed in waterproof containers designed to travel underwater. During the night, Iranian frogmen transport the containers and tie them to Palestinian fishing boats located closer to shore. The Palestinian boats return to Gaza, towing the containers underwater to avoid detection. The Obama administration must put in place a mechanism to ensure the control of the border before asking Israel or Egypt to open it. One of the discussed proposals by Israel is a multinational force organization, just like the one in Sinai, which was created after the 1979 Israeli-Egypt peace treaty. This type of international force, headed by the United States, and has the power to take military action if it needs to, in order to halt weapons smuggling. If the international community does not follow through on a plan to stop the smuggling, and if Egypt fails to act, this could lead Israel to occupy the southern edge of Gaza, where the tunnels are located. But one of the most important lessons, Michael, about fighting a war with Islamic radicals who believe they are on a holy mission have still not been learned. And here's what I mean. All across the Arabic world, and especially in Gaza and Lebanon, Muslims are celebrating a, quote, divine victory. This term has been repeated constantly after the Hezbollah war in 2006 and now after the Hamas war in Gaza. These radicals are more empowered than ever because of this divine victory. So what are they talking about? They are talking about the 7th century battle of Badr, in which the Prophet Muhammad's 313 fighters defeated an army three times its size. At the Al-Rahma Mosque in the southern Gaza tip of Khan al-Yunis, Sheikh Ahmed Namer compared the war with Israel to the battle of Badr. Quote, just because we lost hundreds of martyrs and more than 5,000 wounded doesn't mean we are not victorious, he said. The Israelis could hardly even get inside the cities of Gaza because Allah is with the Muslims, not the Jews, end quote. Michael, I have read at least 50 articles today from across the Israeli and American intelligence and press. Not one of them even mentioned this. Israel's Intelligence and Terrorism Information Center called it, quote, the myth of divine victory, and continued justifying in Western words how Israel won the war by the destruction inflicted on the infrastructure of Gaza. We are not listening to our enemy, even though they are screaming their words from the rooftops and what is driving them. I discuss this in detail in my book, They Must Be Stopped. And I give three battles that defined Islamic war thinking and why. The Battle of Badr is one of them. When Yasser Arafat gave interviews in Arabic to the Arabic press, he would constantly quote the Treaty of Al-Hudaybiyah. Every time he was asked, how could you sign a peace treaty with Israel? He would say to them, remember the Prophet and the Treaty of Al-Hudaybiyah. Michael, the Arabs understood exactly what he was talking about. We in the West and the Israelis had no clue. It went right over our heads. The Arabs knew the significance. He was describing how the Prophet signed the peace treaty with his enemy, the Meccans, and used the time to rebuild his army until he was strong enough to attack and defeat them. 2 years later, Muhammad broke the treaty and attacked them and took over Mecca when they were least expecting it. Michael, here is the point we in the West miss. Deception in war is one of the main commandments and tactics of Islam. No matter what Hamas agrees to, it is only to placate gullible Western politicians who do not understand nor listen to what the Islamists are really saying to their street. They have a plan to eradicate the Jews from the Middle East. Talking is useless. Unless Obama can change their goals, his talking is just going to make him a pawn in their hands till they can destroy Israel. This is why, Michael, it is up to people like you and me to sound the alarm, to throw political correctness in the garbage where it belongs and start calling a spade a spade. We have no time to waste. I'm Brigitte Gabrielle. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks for the report, Brigitte. I'll be right back.
Savage.
If you were an amateur student of history and you were living in the 17th century, you would have come to the conclusion probably that it was only a question of a few centuries before the whole of Europe and Asia would fall under not Arab but Mongolian domination. There were no signs of any Arabian expansion at that time. You would have been afraid of the Mongolian invasion at that time. And then suddenly something happened. Something that no one had ever seen before, not for 1,000 years. No Semitic people had founded an empire for 1,000 years. Then suddenly, out of nowhere, the Bedouin flared up for 1 century of phenomenal splendor. And the Bedouin spread their rule and language from Spain to the boundaries of China. And with it, they brought the world a new culture. And they created a religion that is still to this day one of the most vital religions on earth. The man who did this was named Muhammad. And I'm not going to go into the history of Muhammad. I believe that to those of you who are more interested. But this 100 years is very interesting. The great days of the Arabs, as I said, saw a Bedouin flare up and spread out from the regions of, from Spain into the boundaries of China. And it was one of the most amazing stories of military conquest in the history of the human race. The Byzantine army was smashed by the Arabs at the Battle of the Yarmouk in 634. That's a tributary of Jordan. Next, they conquered Syria, Damascus, Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, and the rest, and they fell without any resistance whatsoever to the Muslim invasion. Those nations were not at that time Muslim, and most elements in the population went over to Islam. Then the Muslim armies turned east, and they went to Persia, now known as Iran. Persia at that time was not Muslim. They had a great general, the Iranians of those time, the Persians, called Rustam. They had a great force of elephants. And for 3 days they fought the Arabs at Qadizia. And then their army broke and they ran. And Persia was conquered. Persia was converted to Islam. Then the Muslim Empire pushed into the western Turkestan region. They pushed east until it met the Chinese. Egypt was not Muslim. And then Egypt fell without resistance to the new Muslim conquerors, the Arab conquerors, and full of their fanatical belief in the sufficiency of their book, the Quran, wiped out the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library. They sacked it. Then the Muslims turned along the north coast of Africa to the Straits of Gibraltar and Spain. Spain was invaded in 710. The Pyrenees Mountains were reached in 720. In 732, the Arabs had reached the center of France. Pay attention. But here the Arabs were stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers and pushed back as far as the Pyrenees again, not by reason, but by steel. Egypt gave the Muslims a large seagoing fleet of ships. And for a long while, it looked like they would take Constantinople. But although the Arabs made repeated sea attacks with the captured Egyptian fleet, the great city held out against them. All you have to know is that this has happened before. It's happening again. Once again, Islam has conquered half of Europe, only this time they've done it without firing a shot. This time they did it through the Trojan horse of liberalism, a mental disorder. This time they have done it by using the guise of simply seeking salvation in Christian Europe, when we know, in fact, they want to take over Europe and convert it to Islam. It may be something quite different by the time your children are your age. The only question is, what is America going to be by the time your children are your age? The only question is, when are you going to awaken to the fact that we too are being invaded through a Trojan horse of liberalism, of compassion, of asylum, and primarily through the tool of immigration, which is out of control, Jackson. That's all you need to know is what I just taught you. It's insane. Only a more savage nation can survive, and here we've turned to the left. Huh? Do you remember a couple of weeks back when I told you about a group of phony conservatives who went to have dinner with Barack Obama? Remember how they came back the next day and gushingly reported how good it was to spend time with him?
This was an off-the-record dinner, and I'm going to keep it off the record in terms of deep content, but Peggy Noonan was there, Paul Jagoa, The Wall Street Journal, Bill Kristol, myself, Charles Krauthammer, some others, about 9 or 10 of us. You know what? I don't think he's trying to win us over, but he's trying to connect with us. He's trying to engage with us, to his great credit. This was a very cordial dinner. I want to make that point. He's so well-informed that he loves to deal with both sides of the
issue. Stop it. Get him off my show. Well, one of those false conservatives was Bill Kristol, the editor of the Weekly Standard. Bill Kristol, who has a column in the far-left New York Times, and still poses, by the way, as a conservative, has an article today entitled, Will Obama Save Liberalism? I guess a little dinner, that is a free dinner, goes a long way for Crystal the call boy. In his article, he said that January 20th, 2009, marked the end of the conservative era. He praised Obama, saying his inaugural speech was unabashedly pro-American and implicitly conservative. This is a case study in what is happening to the check pants Republican phonies across America. See what people who just call themselves Republicans have done to this country? When liberals take power, they see which way the wind is blowing and hop on board. That is, the conservatives of yesterday. Remember, Crystal is a call boy, and it's the Meekly Standard. The Meekly Standard, by the way, is owned by Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch conducted fundraisers for Hillary Clinton. And, of course, Rupert Murdoch owns Fox News. Whether it's Fox News or Crystal the call boy or Dr. Strangelove Krautenhammer, you choose. There is a broad section of the government media complex whose sole purpose is to fool Americans into thinking that they're truly conservatives and milk them for all they're worth. You see, you have MSLGBT on one side, Fox News on the other, but in essence, they're all owned by the same corporate mentality. And that is why so-called conservative praises a socialist president. That's why John McCain has signed off on every major decision Obama has made. And that's why you need to listen to Michael Savage. Okay, moving on. Here are the headlines from michaelsavage.com, and I want to tell you that the listenership to my show is growing, as is the readership to michaelsavage.com. Here are my headlines. Illegal alien shoots and kills unarmed nightclub goers in Portland. You'll have to read the whole story to find what I found. They say a gunman opened fire and wounded people in an apparently random act, but you have to read the whole article to realize it was an illegal alien who did it. After all, you can't tell the people the truth. They're liable to get the message that illegal immigration is bad for the country. And then over in Israel, Jew haters want to try Jews for defending themselves in Gaza. Interesting that Israeli soldiers will be put on charges for war crimes while the Hamasniks, I guess, who've been firing rockets and killing children for years, they're going to go scot-free. From the San Francisco Chronicle, you wouldn't know it from the mainstream media. I doubt that it was covered by Fixed News. But there was a march in San Francisco by tens of thousands of opponents of abortion over the weekend. And a black preacher says that black genocide is being promoted by Obama. Why does he say that? Why? Because most of the children being aborted are black. You wouldn't know that from the white liberals, would you? Nancy Pelosi, the Italian grandmother from San Francisco, says that she expects contraception will help revive the economy because it prevents the birth of children. That's something only LSMGBT can approve of, Nancy. Congratulations on twisting reality. And again from Portland, the gay mayor of Portland refuses to resign over sex with an underage boy. I guess it's different strokes for different folks and different laws for different lawmakers. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.